It's the Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 114. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. I'm joined first by my brother, Matt. We talk about how good Tyler Haas can be, how good we think he will be. We also talk about Ziggy and his chances to be named NFL Defensive Rookie of the Year. We then continue our preview of the football season by talking about wide receivers, tight ends, and running backs. Then, I welcome onto the podcast Ben Hommiller. He's the producer of NCAA Football 14 by EA Sports. We talk about how awesome that video franchise has been and what you can expect out of the newest version of the game. This is the Rise and Shout Podcast. You can catch us at vanquishthefoe.com. You can always download us on iTunes. And you're going to listen to us, I hope, right now. All right, Matt, what's going on?
What is going on? A little all-star break, you know?
A little all-star break. Your boy Bryce Harper came close to winning the home run derby, but then Cespedes slammed the door.
Put on a little bit of a show in the first round, Cespedes did, huh?
And in the final round, I would say. The final round, he had like four or five outs left when he finished up.
I mean, who knows?
Who knows what he could have done, Matt?
Yeah, he looked pretty good.
Could have been magical.
Yeah, but I was, the good news for Harper is he's going to be in that thing again. I'll be shocked if he doesn't bring home one of those trophies by the time it's over.
He does like to hit moonshots.
He does.
So let me ask you a question. Do you like the home run derby as is, or would you make modifications to it?
I think I like it as is, but I don't know that I've sat down and thought a lot about potential modifications. What kind of stuff are you talking
Guess
about?
Guess who has thought about it a lot?
You and or somebody who published their thoughts on the interwebs.
Both of those things are true. I'm not going to reference, though, Jeff Sullivan on Fangraphs has some interesting ideas, but actually most of the cool ideas come in the comments section. What I will say is this. I think two elements could make this cooler, though I like the home run derby. I enjoy watching it. Though, can I tell you my guilty pleasure of All-Star Weekend, week, or whatever it's called?
What's that?
The Legends and Celebrity Softball Game.
Oh, boy.
I can't look away.
I didn't see any of that.
I can't look away from Daryl Strawberry looking like he's 85, trying to field the ball in the outfield, or Kevin James swinging like a madman, but just popping it up to the catcher. But anyway, I think incorporating distance somehow would be cool. And Jeff Sullivan at Fangraphs mentions that in particular. But his solution is whoever hits the longest home run, they get like 10 swings, and whoever hits the longest one wins. But I also think a tournament-style thing would be cool, or they bring anybody who wants to participate, anybody who's on a active 25-man Major League roster, they can show up. And during the day, and there would be highlights of this, they would have a swing-off, and then the top 10 or so go at that night.
That's a cool idea.
Because there are some guys, like, you remember Willy Molpina, who played for the Red Sox for a little while?
Mm-hmm.
He was terrible at baseball, but he was really good at hitting batting practice home runs.
Yeah, but do people really want to see that? People want to watch the guys who got in there.
Yeah, 9 out of 10 people watching that didn't even know who Yoenis Cespedes even was. So, no. People want to see massive moonshots, which he delivered, right? And Harper did, too. But they want to see just massive home runs. I mean, think of the – do you remember when Hamilton put on that show a few years ago?
Yep.
Did you watch that one?
Yep.
Yeah, I watched that one. That was amazing. And at the time, Hamilton was not Hamilton. You know what I mean? Like, he was not a household name.
Right.
Except for the fact that he had been a high draft pick who had, you know, gotten in lots of trouble. So anyway, just some thoughts. So let's leave baseball behind to the joy of some of our listeners. Let's switch to basketball, Matt.
Little hoops.
The men's team for the World University Games, they did not finish particularly well.
I think for the first time in a long time, they didn't even make it to the medal round and placed ninth in the competition. So, as part of that, Tyler Haas, in the last few games of qualification, did not play hardly at all, including one game where he didn't play at all, and then played fairly significant minutes in the consolation bracket. So, first question, Matt, do you think Team USA, and I didn't watch a single minute of this tournament, I watched highlights and that's it, do you think Team USA could have benefited from more of the Haas man?
Maybe, but like you, I saw some highlights, but I didn't sit down and watch an entire game. They were at 3 o'clock in the morning, and I had a lot going on. So I thought I wanted to, but I didn't get to it. So it's difficult for me to really say. But it sounds to me like, you know, he didn't really get into a rhythm. Whether that's a part of the system or that that's a part of he just didn't get the reps or he didn't get the time, I don't know. So I would have a hard time jumping onto that bandwagon.
Yeah, I understand that, but I will jump onto it. They should have played him more. It's Tyler Haas. Scores 21 points a game.
Haven't they ever heard of Jimmer Fredette?
Well, I will tell you this. Second guessing will happen not just on Haas, but in the rotation and coaching in general, when a team with as much talent as they had can't even get into the second round or the medal round or whatever you want to call it.
Which is very strange. I mean, they should have been very competitive.
Yeah, they should have been. They got good players on the team. So, Matt, let's focus on Mr. Haas.
Mm-hmm.
How good can he be? We've talked a little bit about this on the podcast, but what is his ceiling? Is his ceiling Jemmer? Is it different kind of player, so it's not a good comparison? What is Haas' ceiling as with his career at BYU?
I feel like Haas is a different kind of a player, but I do want to say that his ceiling is up in the Jemmer realm, in the sense that I think he's got the skill set and the talent to develop that type of hype and gain that type of attention. And if, you know, depending on what else goes on around him, I think we'll have a lot to do with that. But I think he definitely has the potential to get up into those types of discussions, at least at the college level.
I think he has the potential to get there. I you lost me at hype, though. He'll never capture the Jemmer thing. He's just not that kind of – he doesn't do as many of the spectacular drives. Now, granted, he is a sophomore, and Jemmer didn't really – start doing that on a consistent basis till he was a junior, but they're such different players. The comparison is a little problematic, but I agree with you. He has the ability to be in that conversation as one of the best players to ever play for the Cougars. The question, though, that's more pertinent in some ways is what will he be? And specifically next year as a junior, what do we expect out of him? You know, 30 points a game? You know, a little similar output to last year. What should fans realistically expect from Tyler Haas? He's a suspect.
He is a suspect.
You're suspect.
I expect to see a significant upswing in his production and then his level of play. You know, you got to remember the situation he's walking into before this last season. You don't get a real true off season to prepare, and to come in and he looked pretty good for that. So I think that coming back with that experience of last season under his belt, some of this experience, playing with the U.S. team, I still think it was good for him. I think we can expect things like 30 points a game and for him to, really be, you know, the force or the signature player or whatever you want to call it for this team and for this team to be very competitive as a result.
Yeah, I don't know if he'll get up to 30 points a game. That's a lot.
Oh, I think he's going to blow your mind.
Oh, well, you know, I prepare to have my mind blown. I don't know about 30 points. I think he'll score more you know, if you gave me over under at 23.5, I might take the over on that. Sounds like you'd take the way over.
Oh, I'd go into I would feel comfortable taking the over well into the mid to high 20s.
See, I kind of feel if we're in the high 20s, that probably means we're not a very good team if he's having to score that much. That maybe Micah and some of the other folks have not developed and that he's having to carry too much load. But again, one of our best seasons had Jimmer scoring, you know, a bazillion points a game. So what right. do I know?
Roughly a bazillion.
Roughly a bazillion, give
an
or take.
Approximation.
A gazillion. So anyway, that's Minus Tyler Haws.
Yeah.
That's Tyler Haws. So we will, of course, be talking a lot more about him as the season we get closer to the basketball season. So, Matt, let's talk about another Cougar. This one, a former Cougar, and his name is Ziggy Ansah. You might have heard about him.
Yeah, the name's come up a couple times in casual conversation, I think.
Yeah, he's been mentioned on this podcast. So he was the fifth overall pick by the Detroit Lions, and it seemed like he got all the buzz before the draft, and he was rising up the draft boards, as Mel Kiper might say. And then after the draft, there seemed to be a little bit of backlash in the media, like, wow, he was taken too early, he was a flash in the pan. And, you know, we talked with Sean Yule from the SB Nation Detroit Lions site, and he didn't say that. He thinks he's good, but he was worried, same as I'm stating, that some folks were headed that direction with their analysis. Now that he's had some time in front of the coaches, they are gushing about him, which, of course, you expect. They did pick him with the fifth pick in the draft. So, Matt, one of the things that came up on the Twitterverse and other places is Ziggy Ansah, Defensive NFL Rookie of the Year. Your thoughts? Is that a realistic possibility for a guy that, hey, wait a second, you may not have heard this, he hasn't been playing football for that long?
Does he even know how to put on the pads?
He didn't. I heard he didn't even know what NFC and AFC meant. That's just a rumor. I don't know if it's true.
Here's the deal. There is a part of me that is apparently, you know, very bullish tonight on the Cougars that wants to tell you, oh, yeah, this is absolutely a reasonable conversation to be had.
Yeah, have you been drinking blue Kool-Aid today?
So just out of trying to temper that, I'm going to say no. But let me tell you a couple things that I do think about the situation that he's in.
Yes, okay? Tell me those couple things.
I think that the defensive line in Detroit is one of the best collections of defensive line talent in the NFL. And if they can come up with a system that works him into the right types of situations to take advantage of the freakish type of skills he has, and I mean like the non-teachable stuff. He's got really good reach, and he's very quick, and he's also, and because there's a difference between quick and fast, and he's both for his size. And given the what they have there, you know, when you look at guys like Nick Fairley and Ndamukong Suh, and you think this could open up some opportunities for a very athletic, fast, strong, long-armed guy to get in there and make some noise. And so I think that's really – it's that combination that creates it for him. If he were somewhere else, I wouldn't be as confident in what I think he's going to be able to do this season. But I think that the system and the personnel there work out very much in his favor. And the other thing is – they spent a lot of money to get him at that draft spot. And so as long as he is close and coming along and progressing, they're going to give him the reps and they're going to give him the time on the field that's going to turn him into the type of player that would get him into those conversations. So I think that the combination of the personnel where he is in Detroit and the opportunity kind of forced by the way that he was brought in there does create this an opportunity for him to get to that level. But I think it's probably a little bit of a stretch for a guy who's, you know, really only been playing football for a couple of years. You know, this is the NFL. I mean, it's a pretty big jump up. Do I think he's going to be successful? Yes. Do I think he's going to win Rookie of the Year, Defensive Rookie of the Year? Probably not.
Yeah, the thing is, there's just a lot of things can happen to make you the the defensive rookie of the year or not. One of the things that helps him a lot is the fact that he is in a position where counting stats, if he has a good year, will happen. You know, defensive tackles and such, it's harder, I think, to get the attention, you know, but a cornerback with a lot of interceptions, a linebacker with a high interception slash sack slash, you know, tackle total, and a defensive end with a high sack total can get there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the odds makers, they've got him as a decent bet. But the thing is, no, they don't have anybody, because if you look at that high, you look at the draft, I mean, almost half the players in the first round are defensive players. And then, of course, you don't have to come from the first round. It helps, probably. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of good defensive players that were drafted. So not only would he have to have a fantastic season, but he would also have to not be overshadowed by someone else having an even more fantastic season. My second point would be, I don't think the Lions probably expect him to be elite out of the gate, and I don't think anybody else should either. I mean, we joke around that he just started putting on pads, but he's still got a lot to learn. He's going up to a whole new level. As we talked about after he was drafted, the offensive linemen are going to be stronger, faster, and better than he faced consistently at the collegiate level. So I think he'll have a very good rookie year, but I think saying rookie of the year is probably a little much.
Yeah.
All right, Matt. Well, let's move on to what's next on the little agenda here. Oh, Sports Illustrated. Did you know they still make that?
Sports Illustrated, is it like a comic strip about sports?
Yes. It's a very fun. So Sports Illustrated writer Andy Staples does a column. He's done it, I think he did it last year and now this year, where he basically, not to get too deep into his explanation, but he basically he approaches the Heisman this way when he votes as well. So imagine that college football is holding a draft, and the only data I'm allowed to consider are the performances from that particular season. So in this case, though, it isn't the Heisman. He's looking at all of their career, but he also factors in how much time they have left on campus. So if you're only got 1 year left, you may be downgraded a little bit because somebody might rather have somebody with similar skills than 3 years left. Make sense?
I guess.
So his top pick is a guy you might have heard of, Johnny Manziel. Is that what I say?
Johnny Football,
who's been in the news. We won't go into that, but he seems to be a bit of a whiner, Matt. a little full of himself.
And he needs to stay off of the Twitter.
Yeah, he and a lot of other people.
Or just block followers, dude. It's not that complicated. I mean, just let your friends follow you and block other people so you can use Twitter like a normal human being. But, I mean, this is not working out for him as a public forum.
So if I was in PR, here's what I would say to professional athletes about Twitter. Don't. Use it purely as a marketing tool. Don't ever put any personal feelings on it. It's a bad idea. Because I comment and say something stupid.
But listen, I'll put the disclaimer on there saying that these opinions are not my own and do not reflect the opinions of the university or team that I play for, and it'll make it all better, right?
No. So anyway, in this draft, two BYU players are mentioned, Matt. The first one is Kyle Van Noy, drafted with the 30th pick. By Central Michigan of all colleges, which is unfortunate. So he's basically, it's not saying Kyle Van Noy is the 30th best player, but it's kind of close to that, the way he's got it. And then he's also got Mr. Hoffman, where did I have this, at picked number 80, also a senior, of course. It's funny, he says Hoffman caught 100 passes as his junior at BYU, who's in this hypothetical draft, was taken by Tulsa. In Tulsa's up-tempo offense, he might catch 130. Guess who else is having an up-tempo offense this year, Andy?
Hello.
Thanks for paying attention. BYU. So, anyway, Matt, what do you think about these rankings? This is a pretty high praise. I kind of expected for Van Noy to make a top 100 list like this, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had a fantastic junior season. He killed it in the bowl game.
Oh, destroyed it.
Would have been drafted in the NFL in the first couple of rounds had he decided to go out, most likely. But I think Hoffman is a player that is starting to get a little bit more recognition that maybe until the end of last year was really flying under the radar.
Yeah, it's really interesting to see. And, you know, I think all BYU fans are hoping that this, you know, comes together with the new up-tempo offense, as you mentioned, that we're hoping to see in Lavelle Edwards Stadium this fall. But we've all felt like Hoffman had tremendous upside. And if we could just get a good quarterback to throw him the football, that he'd be, you know, the next Austin Colley or the next whatever you want to call him. And I think he's got that type of ability, and I'm excited to see what he can do with a decent quarterback, or at least somebody who isn't hurt too badly to throw the football effectively. So,
yes.
You know, and I don't even mean that as a slight this time, but
sure, you do.
No, I mean we've all moved on, right? So
I haven't.
You know, I watched a couple games last week, and I watched a couple games from last year, and it's sad. That was a difficult season to weather. But anyway, coming back to Hoffman, I think that the expectations are merited. I think he's shown flashes of being very, very talented. And I would hope that given the stage that he will be on, the schedule that is put together for 2013, that he's not only going to live up to this hype, but also going to surprise some people.
Yeah, I think he will. And that actually leads in beautifully, Matt, to our next section. That is what we like to call in the podcasting world a beautiful segue.
You like that?
Into our preview of the wide receiver, tight end, and running back position. So let's start with wide receiver, Matt. We just talked about Hoffman.
Did you just say wide receiver?
Wide receiver. Elmer, I'm playing the part of Adam this week as Elmer Fudd.
I think you did really just say ride with Sivo.
Ride with Sivo.
I can't even do it the way that you did it. It's difficult to do.
We've been marriage, a blessed event.
Is what brings us together
today.
Luckily, this is a dream.
In a dream.
This is a podcast listened to by BYU fans, so everyone will get that joke.
I hope so. If you if you don't get that joke, ask someone, find out, and then get the joke. All right, so Matt, Hoffman's awesome. Kind of like we did with Taysom Hill last week when we talked to QBs. We're not going to spend a lot of time talking about Hoffman. We've talked about him a lot. He's one of the best wide receivers to probably ever play at BYU and an NFL prospect. Enough said, right?
Mm-hmm. That's fine.
After that, it gets a little dicier at the wideout position. So let's go through it a little bit. The next option that seems to be kind of the obvious option, if you will, is Falslev.
Right.
He's been consistent. We kind of know what to make out of him. Is that fair?
Yeah. I feel like we have a kind of a grasp on who Falslev is.
Yes, and we're not...
I mean, as a football player, not as a person. I'm sure he's much more complicated as a person. He has many layers, as do we all. I'm just talking about football here.
Well, he was second on the team last year in receptions with 37, which is not a lot for your second-place guy when your first-place guy has 100.
Don't even start talking about yardage, Adam. I mean... The difference between, I mean, it was Cody Hoffman and everybody else.
Yes. The rest of the team struggled to meet Cody Hoffman. That's not exactly true. There was another 2,000 yards besides him, but it was divided up into very small little packages. So Falslev, we know what we got. And quite frankly, I'm not anti-Falslev. He's kind of a running back where you just happen to hand it off to him, you know, with a pass, right?
Right.
I mean, he's not a breakout guy. He averaged 7.4 yards per catch last year. That's not now, again, we've talked about before the fact that the quarterback play wasn't what it was supposed to be. But pencil him in for 30, probably more catches this year if the offense is up-tempo. Next on the list is Ross Oppo.
Mm-hmm.
What do we make out of him? Is it just the quarterbacks have been terrible? Injuries, or is he just had a couple flashes as a freshman, and he's just an average or above average wide receiver, and we should stop expecting him to break out as Robin to Hoffman's Batman?
Wow, I really like that, the Robin to Hoffman's Batman bit. I like that. That was good.
Thanks.
But I...
They play wide receiver.
Oh, boy. You know, when I feel like, honestly, I mean, I like Ross Oppo. He seems like a good guy. I do feel terrible about the broken finger he suffered that a couple years ago. That was
terrible.
Gruesome.
Yep.
But I don't know that that's really, I mean, obviously it set him back time-wise, but I don't think that really impacts his game now. I think he's an above-average receiver. I think he's got decent hands. I don't know that I feel great about his route running. And I think that sometimes last year he looked a little lost. Like there was definitely miscommunication between him and, you know, whoever was riding the quarterback carousel on any given day. And I, you know, and maybe that's a function of the system. Maybe it's a function of the fact that there wasn't a consistent quarterback. But at the same time, I mean, Hoffman caught 100 balls.
Yes.
So, I mean, somebody figured it out.
Well, and that's the thing, quite frankly, is that sometimes I hear, well, the quarterbacks are terrible, which, granted, the quarterback play last year, we've discussed this, was not good. I mean, even when Hill was in, he was fairly inaccurate as a passer. So, you know, he didn't exactly, you know, light it up when he was in there as a passer. As a rusher, yes, but as a passer. And Lark did a little better, granted, against pretty mediocre competition. And mediocre, I may be insulting the word mediocre there. The flip side to this is that Oppo did not do what Hoffman did, and I don't think he has the skills, quite frankly. He's at least not demonstrated them consistently to say that, yeah, he could be that Robin to Hoffman's Batman. You know, he's just not, he hasn't shown it. I hope I'm wrong.
Oh, I hope I'm wrong, or I hope that he's improved.
Yes.
In the past, you know, over this offseason.
Sure.
It would be fantastic to have, you know, two really, you know, threatening receivers on this offense. I think it would do a lot for the scheme that Anai is trying to put in place.
Yes.
But I haven't seen anything that makes me expect that to happen.
So the other returning wide receiver that got significant, I guess is the right word, catches last year was Ridley, Skylar Ridley. But he only had 20 catches. I've never been impressed with him a lot. Granted, we haven't seen much of him, so it's not – sample size issues there. He got a lot of praise in spring ball. Do you expect big season out of Skylar Ridley?
I don't. I was going to come right out and say it.
Wow, yeah, don't hold back.
I've always looked at Skylar Ridley's
family just shut off the podcast.
Well, and they're going to, if they keep listening, they'd be emailing me instead. I think that I've always
at loyalcougars.com, just in case you're curious.
I've always seen Skylar Ridley as like a Rudy. I think the coaches like him.
Oh my
I think
God.
The players like him.
This is fantastic.
I think given some opportunity, he may jump off sides and get in on a sack.
You're taking it too far.
Yeah, the Rudy comparison isn't really appropriate, but.
Well, I didn't say it was inappropriate.
I don't know if it's precise, but I think that he's a guy that, you know, given an opportunity at the right time, you know, might make a play, but I don't know that he's a playmaker. I don't know if he's a guy you can rely on, you know, down the stretch of a whole season, to come through for you over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, I think every once in a while, and given, you know, in certain opportunity, he's going to get open and he's going to do something great, or he's going to make some kind of catch that will make us all wonder, like, oh, why doesn't he play more? And the answer is that he's probably just average. And that's okay, because not everybody can be above average.
Oh, my gosh. This is terrible. Is he even on scholarship?
At one point, I believe he was a walk-on. I don't know what his current... with the current situation.
According to BYUroster.com, it looks like he is not a scholarship athlete, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
And that might be where the Rudy comparison ends, right? So,
Yeah, I'm not seeing him on there. So, anyway, we'll move past. We've spent way too much time on Skylar Ridley. I'll tell you that right now.
But you know what? So has every BYU fan. Like, everybody still talks about him.
That's true. So there's a couple other wide receivers. I'm not going to go through them one by one. There are the Matthews. Do you expect anyone else from this group to emerge, or do you think it's Oppo or where we were last year? I mean, there'll be more volume this year because of the offense, most likely. So the numbers will go up. But will the ratios change, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
I think the ratios will change just a little bit. But that's going to have more to do with the quarterback play or, in the system than it does with any of these guys stepping up. As far as these other guys, I don't really know, and I don't think anybody knows enough about them to know what to expect as far as their production is concerned.
Well, remember this. More than one out of three receptions, this isn't attempts, but receptions, went to Cody Hoffman.
Yeah.
He got more than one out of three, which is way high. So I think the ratio has to change.
Late in the season, I mean, in those last couple of games, Lark threw the ball at Oppo more than he had seen earlier in the season. And that might be a chemistry thing. I don't know. But somebody's going to have to step up because I don't think we can. I don't think we win 10 games if Hoffman's the only answer.
So Oppo caught in the last three games of the season. I'm looking at his game log, dude. It was all the same.
So I just felt that way.
It felt that way. It's all the same. His biggest game from last year was the first game of the year as far as receptions go. And then his biggest game for yardage was against Idaho. Two catches for 9 yards in the bowl game against San Diego State. But let's move on. Too much wide receivers.
Okay.
They're boring. So let's go over to possibly more boring tight ends.
Oh, boy, can we go back and talk about receivers then?
So,
I want to make an argument about targets versus receptions.
Yes.
We don't have that data.
I don't have the data for that.
Right.
So I don't know about targets as far as the last couple of things. So we have a question on this, tweet bag question, Matt, from the Irish Mexican. That's at Bullishism. And let's see here. Where is it? I thought we had a tweetback question from him. No, it was from Justin Sweeney. Oh, my gosh, I'm losing it.
Oh, what are you doing?
At Justin D. Sweeney. I'm
sorry, Sweeney.
No, I'm not really that sorry. He asked if we miss him. The answer is, of course, we miss you, man. He said, which tight end slot guy, so he's kind of put them together, has the most receptions in 2013? Matthews, Thompson, Friel, Mahina, or someone else? Matt? Now, this is kind of a combination wide receiver tight end question. So he put Matthews in there as one of the guys.
I'm going to go with Friel.
I am absolutely going to go with Friel. I think Friel is the breakout guy. Him and Mahina both, actually. I think they may have more catches than all of the rest of those guys he mentioned will have. I think that's one and two, probably, for me.
Yeah, I feel like we're finally going to have a real starting tight end, and I think it's going to be Friel.
I think both of them are going to play and play well. I really do. I think, Anai in the past, now granted, if it's a whole new offense, then this may not really actually matter, but in the past, man, he loves to use the tight end.
Yep.
And for whatever reason, it seemed that Brandon Doman's offense was allergic to the tight end.
They did not even realize that they had fielded one.
Yes, yes. And it seemed like the only time it got thrown to was like on like the third read on the quarterback,
Or he happened to be standing in the way and the ball hit him when it was supposed to be going towards Hoffman.
Yeah, that might have happened too. So we're actually cautiously optimistic about the tight end position, about Friel and Mahina. Fair?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So we're cautiously optimistic. So let's move to running back. We've got another question from Mr. Sweeney on running back. So he says, am I crazy for expecting Jamal Williams to absolutely explode this season? We'll wait to weigh in on that, Justin. Like 1,000 yards plus 300 to 400 receiving yards, explode. Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Now, I will say, Justin, you are crazy because you're way too freaking low. Okay? So last year, not starting or hardly playing in the first few games, Jamal Williams had 800 yards on the ground.
Right.
So I think 1,000, if he stays healthy, is easy money.
Absolutely reasonable. Yep.
He had 315 yards receiving.
He was one of the best receivers on the team.
Yes. Well, I mean, he had...
Number two in yardage.
Yeah, number two in yardage and number two in yards per catch as well. Number two in touchdowns. No, I'm sorry, not in touchdowns. That was for real. I'm reading columns incorrectly. Anyway, he
was... And I think
was,
the third longest reception of the year.
I think that may be accurate. So, anyway, the point is he was a vital point to the passing game. I think it's more like... The crazy high-end blowout side is more like 1,400 yards rushing and more like 500 yards receiving, right? That's more of the upside.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think he's going to be I really believe he could go down as the greatest running back that's ever come through.
Whoa, crazy.
I think he's that good. I think he has that potential. And, you know, people used to say this. I watched last week. I watched the the 96 BYU-Utah game, and the ESPN announcers then were talking about Ronnie Jenkins. And the coaches at the time were saying, we've never had a running back like this. You know, and unfortunately, things for him at BYU didn't work out real well. But you look at this Williams kid, and you just think, you know, he has all of those types of skills. And you know, if he's got the opportunity to do it, you know, barring an injury or something like that, I think he's really going to turn some heads, not just among BYU fans, but I think you're going to hear him talked about at the national level.
Well, and his Twitter handle is JSwagDaddy.
Which is awesome.
So, I mean.
What's cooler than that?
He's got it all going. So Justin asks another question, man. He came back with a vengeance this week.
Ah, that's great.
So. J Swag Daddy is the feature back. Alisa, he says, playing that 2009 Brian Correa role, which I think is a good fit, right?
I think it's a good description, yeah.
Where does that leave Hine? Adam Hine?
Holding his helmet.
No, I don't think so.
Somebody's got to spell Williams after he breaks one for 70 yards.
Well, I think there will be carries to go around, and I think Hill is not going to run as much as we think he is. Because they're going to try to protect him and get him through the year.
Yep.
I think there will just be more plays this year and more carries. And I think though Jamal will be the feature back and Alisa will be the kind of number two bruiser back, I think Hine will get some time. And I also think it's very likely that one of them misses some time this year. I mean, running backs get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Hine will step in. And I'm actually, after spring ball, pretty optimistic about him. How are you feeling about Hine?
I feel pretty good about it. I do think there are going to be carries to go around, and I think some of it will be a function of the way that the offense runs. I think that they will rotate people through to keep fresh legs at some of these positions, especially since there is a little bit of depth there. You know, this is a position where I haven't been this confident in recent years. You know, if you get one or two deep into the chart, what does this really look like and what kind of situation are we looking at? But I think, you know, on a given down, you could put Hine in there and he could effectively execute whatever it is you need him to do, you know, give him the ball or whatever. So I think you could expect to see him to get some carries. But Williams is going to be far and away the feature running back of this offense.
I think another possibility, and I have no insight into this whatsoever, just a wild speculation on my part, is I think because of a lack of talent and depth at wide receiver, I think, and I shouldn't say talent, obviously it's very top-heavy with Hoffman, but beyond that, I think you might see Hine, though I don't know how good of a pass catcher he is, split out, or you might see Williams split out on occasion, and Hine in the backfield, and it could be a dynamic, they're both fast, 1-2 punch to have them both on the field at the same time. So that's another way that if they move Jamal all over the field in order to create some favorable matchups, that may lead to Hine getting some time on the field when otherwise in a more traditional offense, he may not see that.
That's an excellent point. I mean, and I don't mean to, you know, just pad your ego anymore here.
But you can't pad it anymore. It's already full.
I think you could really open up some cool opportunities with the offense by using Williams that way.
Yes.
And I think it puts Hine in some cool situations as far as the types of carries and things he could get off of that. Because if Williams is as good as we're expecting him to be, that will cause some timeouts when they come out and he's out in a slot, or if he if he goes in motion or something. It's going to screw up some defenses. I like the sound of it. I hope you're right.
Yeah, me too. Me too. It'd be pretty cool. So, Matt, next week we will be previewing the defensive side of the ball. I should say in 2 weeks. We're off next week because of my vacation. But we'll be back in 2 weeks. If you have Twitter questions for us, or tweet bag questions, I should say, tweet at me, @BYU_RideShout. If you've got longer form questions, you can send them to me, adam@loyalcougars.com. Quick preview, Matt. One of the over-unders we will have is guess, did Bronson Confusi have more tackles last year or personal fouls on the basketball court? So we'll wait to see that. So, Matt, before we go, let's quickly talk Texas. We're going through each of the opponents. A great article by Matt Brown on Vanquish the Foe, talking about Texas, and we had some Texas fans weigh in at the bottom. But I want to hit one thing, Matt. On the poll, and this is unofficial poll, of course, on vanquishthefoe.com, but 660 votes. They basically asked people to predict these things, okay? BYU wins by more than 14. BYU wins by, you know, 1 to 2 touchdowns. BYU wins by less than a touchdown. Texas wins by more than 2 touchdowns. Texas wins by 1 to 2. Texas wins by less than 6 points. And the last one, Rick Perry closes Texas in a fit of trolling. BYU wins via forfeit. So that one actually got more votes than BYU wins by more than 2 touchdowns. The winner in this poll was Texas wins by more than 2 touchdowns. Matt, where do you fit on this spectrum? Seems like a lot of fans. Now, granted, we probably had some UT trolls pushing that number up. But if this is to be believed, there are a lot of BYU fans that just don't see us winning. Over 60% of the votes went to Texas wins, period.
Yeah, I'm in the BYU wins, but by less than 6. You know, this is when we've gone through and done our season previews, I often pick this game as a loss.
Yes, you do. You're a waffler.
But I am feeling especially bullish today about all things BYU
sports.
Yes,
you are.
So I'm going to go ahead and say they could squeak this one out, but I would waffle in between wins by less than 6 or loses by less than 6. I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a tough game. But if I were to vote right now, I'd probably vote BYU wins by less than 6. If I were to vote in the morning when I'm cranky, I'd probably vote they lose by less than 6.
Yeah, I don't know who peed blue in your Cheerios, but let's keep it going, buddy, because you're just happy-go-lucky tonight. I actually would also vote for BYU wins by less than 6. I have consistently picked this as a win when we've gone through the season, which we'll, of course, do again later this summer and watch you waffle further. But I do think this will be a tough game. I think they're two fairly close teams. And after week one, we may feel differently about both of the teams.
I think there's a lot of unknown about Texas. For me, there's a lot of unknown about Texas.
But they are darling right now to pick for a bounce-back year.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people that know more about this stuff than we do, including Bill Connolly, and SB Nation really likes them to analytically, not just, you know, some old crotchety sports writer in a corner filling out a ballot. You know, there are reasons to believe Texas will be a better team this year in 2013 than they were. So should be a fantastic game. So, Matt, let's say that it's 45 days. We're recording this on Tuesday night. 45 days until kickoff. Awesome.
Yes.
I mean, awesome. Are you excited?
I'm very excited. I can't sleep at night. I'm so excited.
Well, it's good. I know something else that's going to get you excited. Right after we finish here, some people are probably wondering why it took so long. There's going to be an interview with the producer of EA Sports NCAA Football 14.
And that game is how I always fix my football addiction during the off season, especially right about now. Which is, I think, why they release it this time of year.
Yes, absolutely.
But it is a great way to get through the cold, long, dark thing that is the college football off season.
Oh, one of my favorites of all time. So, Matt, on our way out, Irish Mexican does have some questions. I'm going to answer only one of them. We've talked about Independence and other teams before, so I'm not going to do that one. Pizza chain, Papa John's, Domino's, Pizza Hut, Little Caesars, or other? Pick.
I'm about to blow your mind. Domino's.
Domino's with the new pizzas.
I like the new Domino's. I do. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to shy away from it.
Classically, I'm a Pizza Hut guy, but I have to say I get Papa John's more than anything else.
Yeah, Papa John's is a close second for me, mostly for the sauce and the jalapenos.
Okay, there you go. I believe they're not jalapenos, but that's...
Whatever they are.
Yeah, they're peppers of a different variety.
They're peppers. Whatever they are, they're delicious. Okay?
That's good.
Potato, potato, whatever.
So is that, last question was flat, deep pan, or original crust?
If I go with the deep... We mean deep dish? If I do deep dish, I only do deep dish at Lou Malnati's in Chicago.
What about Giordano's?
Lou
Malnati's? Wow, you're a
deep dish. I'll do Giordano's. I'll do one or the other.
Okay, fair enough. Lou Malnati's is better, though.
But it is better. And, as far, when I go from, like, Pizza Hut, I just go regular crust.
I go original crust as well, so.
Yeah, Domino's, yeah.
Well, thank you, everybody. We appreciate it. Another awesome podcast. Hope you enjoy the interview with the EA Sports producer coming up here in a minute. We're off next week. We'll be back in a couple weeks continuing our preview of the 2013 season. So thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. And we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars.
Okay, welcoming to the Rise and Shop podcast is Ben Hommiller, a producer of maybe the greatest video game of all time, NCAA Football by EA Sports. Ben, welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on.
Well, we're excited. I tried to, my brother who co-hosts with me, I tried to tell him I'll try not to act too much like a fanboy in this interview, but there's actually about zero chance of me not acting like a fanboy. But the listeners will be much more interested in hearing you talk, Ben. So let's jump right into it and ask you about NCAA 14. I don't even know what number installment this is in the game series, but obviously it's been going a long time. What new can we see and what is exciting in NCAA 14?
Yeah, this is actually the 21st year that we've come out with an NCAA football game. And so this year, you know, it's our challenge every year and our goal every year to distinguish ourselves above, you know, the last year's game and make it that much better and make new additions that make the game, you know, even better than the one we had before. And so this year, you know, one of our big goals was to really change how the game looks, how the game feels, make it feel completely brand new and add in a lot of things that will really make the game feel fresh. And so talking gameplay, the biggest thing to talk about is the Infinity Engine 2, which is the physics engine that we've added in that applies physics to things like tackles and other kind of impact moments like that. But the new force impact system takes the physics engine was something that was added into Madden last year, but wasn't quite ready for us since we'd come out so much earlier than they do. So we got a polished up version of that physics engine, then applied physics to things like stiff arms and to truck sticks and hit sticks. And so you'll see those impact moments, how physics apply to determining the outcome of a stiff arm and how that will react, how a defender will react to that play. And then it's also the option game. That was a big change for us as well, a big improvement for us, was really getting the option up to a point where you can run these type of spread option offenses that you see, you know, Oregon's and schools like that do now, but you can run it and have a lot of success and have a lot of fun running it. And so we've done a lot of work to the blocking schemes and also how the pitches actually work so that it's a much better experience, a lot more fun to run the option than it ever has been before. And we've added in 30 new pitch types based on different options that we've seen run, from the midline option to veer options to shovel options to everything else that you see, you know, schools doing, you know, in the college game now. We wanted to add in there. And so, you know, it's a completely kind of overhauled gameplay experience and a lot more fun experience.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, one thing I noticed as I was looking at it, I don't have the game yet because, truth be told, I'm old and I have three kids and I don't have a system that runs your games anymore, but I will soon. But one thing I was looking at, Ben, was the recruiting has been something that has been a passion of mine. When I play the game, you know, I can stay up till 3 or 4 in the morning, you know, sometimes just simulating the season so I can get back to recruiting. But several years ago, you guys put recruiting in through the season, which I thought was fantastic. And now it seems like you've simplified it again, which I think was great. I thought it was getting a little, even for me who loves it, was getting a little on the complicated side. So talk about the coaching and the recruiting aspect and what you guys have done to both simplify it in some ways, but also give it a little bit more depth.
Yeah, so I think there were two major areas of focus for Dynasty this year, and that was, as you're saying, that new power recruiting system to really streamline the, you know, what you have to do each week to recruit players. You know, we had an old system in the past where you played the part of the coach and you were making phone calls to prospects and trying to gain their interest in your school and trying to sell the different aspects of your school and how it relates to how they feel about them. And so, you know, that was a kind of a starting point. It was good. It was fun. It worked, but it became tedious over the years to where our longtime fans were like, look, I'm kind of want something a little bit different than this. I've done this enough that I'm looking for a change. And so we went in and kind of stripped out that phone call system. And now it's just basically it's as simple as a points-based recruiting system to where you have your list of players that are on your recruiting board, and you're simply just applying how many of your points that you have for that week towards that player. And so that's like the top line, just in and out real quick doing recruiting version. But then you can go in and there's a lot of depth that is still there. All the depth that had been built up in recruiting previously is still there, from scheduling visits to determining, you know, which guys you're going to scout and which guys you're going to offer your scholarships to. All these different aspects of the kind of depth of recruiting are still there. But, you know, the week in and week out portion is just mainly I've applied these points to these prospects, and you're kind of monitoring and adjusting from week to week. So that's a nice part for our fans to be able to, you know, not spend an hour in between games just, you know, kind of in these recruiting menus if they don't want to. They can just do it real quick, make sure they've got their points allocated the way they want to, and get back to the next week's game. And then the other side of things was coach skills. And that's kind of adding an RPG-style element, you know, role-playing game aspect into Dynasty mode, where you have your coach and he's got your head coach has two different skill trees, a game management tree and a recruiting tree. And you can earn these additional skills throughout the course of your career as a coach that will help you out in different things. Like in the game management one, for example, you can earn a skill that will limit the effects of home field advantage, so that if you go on the road with like a freshman quarterback, he won't get rattled as easily. He won't forget, you know, kind of, you know, we have a mechanic right now where the play art kind of goes squiggly lined and it's hard to make out what the plays are, and he might not be able to recognize which receiver is attached to which button, kind of symbolizing that a freshman on the road might have a hard time in that environment. Well, you can earn a skill that will be able to wipe those away. Or, you know, if it's a big bowl game or a rivalry game, your players will come in excited for that game, and they'll come in, you know, boosted up in their skills because you were able, coach was able to motivate them for that game. Then on the recruiting side, you can earn skills to make you a better recruiter. You might have more points, you know, at the beginning of the season. Let's say you want to go kind of that Mack Brown Texas style where they've kind of locked up their class in the first few weeks of the year. You can have more points at the beginning of the year to go that route. Or you can be like the old style of like Bobby Bowden, where he used to have that close with a flourish shining day and have more points towards the end of the year. Or you can kind of just, you know, allocate points throughout the entire time so you have a boost through all of the year. You've got all these different kind of skills that you can earn to make yourself a better recruiter. Your coordinators each have their own skill trees as well, and they're leveling up. And so, you know, kind of a way to make the game feel more fresh, because it can be different each time you play. And each time you play a different dynasty, the other CPU-controlled coaches for the other schools are all earning these skills as well. So it really changes the dynamic of a dynasty and makes it feel more organic.
Wow, that's That is awesome. At least it is to me, and I'm sure some of our listeners who are diehard. So let me ask you a question that's a little bit more broad, not about the 2014 game, but how do you balance that? You know, these are all these sports games that EA Sports does. They're complicated games. There's a lot of elements. You add in these dynasty elements and everything else. How do you balance making this deep, rich gameplay for those of us that will stay up until 3 in the morning doing a dynasty and, you know, infuriating our spouses versus those that want to play the game, but gosh, that's too much. I just want to press a few buttons, throw the pass, and I don't want to have to be a college football expert in order to play the game.
Yeah, you know, I think for us where that comes in is just adding a variety of options. Let you play how you want to play. And so you see, for just a kind of a general way of playing, there's coach mode where you're not even actually controlling the players in the field. You're just calling plays and letting the CPU kind of play against each other based on your direction of what plays you're calling. Or then there's one button mode, which, you know, simplifies things down to just the every action is on the A button. So you're just running with the players. And it will prompt you to hit the A button at the right time, and it will decide, is it time to do a spin or a juke or a stiff arm or those things. So that kind of helps a lot of the more novice, you know, gamers. And then there's just other aspects of how do you want to get better at the game. We've got a brand new skills trainer in the game this year that teaches you mechanics of things of how to properly run the option so that you don't get intimidated when you go into a game environment and try to run that triple option and you're not sure who you're supposed to read or how you're supposed to pitch the ball. We put you in that environment and give you a chance to brush your skills up, even if you are someone who plays the game every year, to learn new mechanics. If you're someone who hasn't played in a couple years, to catch up on maybe some things that we've added since the last time you played. It's just a great way of getting people, kind of teaching them the aspects of the game. Dynasty side, you know, if you want to, a lot of people just want to play their season. You know, they say, okay, I'm buying the game. You know, I'm a BYU fan. I want to play the BYU 2013 season. We've added a season mode that strips out everything else. You don't have to worry about recruiting. It's not going to be there to kind of get in your way. You essentially just have your season of games, and you have, you know, the other ESPN aspects we've added to the game, like the Heisman watch and your top 25 polls and all those things. But everything else, all the other stuff that, you know, you might feel, you know, is a little too much clutter for you, too much stuff for you to do, you just want to focus on the games, you can go in and play just that season. And so I think for us, it's really adding a variety of different options. You know, the other side too, if you don't want to be the coach, you just want to focus on just being a quarterback, you can go through Road to Glory and create yourself and go through the high school recruiting experience and then become a four-year player at college. Inside of Dynasty, if you want to go that route and play the Dynasty, but you don't want to play both sides of the ball, you can be an offensive or a defensive coordinator and just focus on that side of the ball. So I think it's options, right? It's just variety. It gives it a chance for however you want to play, you have something you can do. And so another new mode for us this year is Ultimate Team, which is another kind of quick experience also in that the games are a lot shorter. So if you don't have a lot of time to play, this is a mode you can go in and basically you're kind of acquiring this team. You're creating this team of fantasy players. We've had a deal with the NFLPA, so we have the rights to every current NFL player. And we've also gone out and signed a number of players. I think, you know, if you've heard some of the players that we've signed for this mode, guys like Bo Jackson, or, you know, Barry Sanders is involved, those sort of players, you can craft and create this team filled with all of these players and play against either the CPU or other players. And that's just a really fun mode, too, to be able to create your school's ultimate team.
Oh, yeah. No doubt of that. I saw the Bo Jackson there, you know. I've been playing football video games long enough to know that, you know, he's got one of the greatest video game versions of a player in the history of video games. So,
be fun to see it was so funny for him. You know, it's one of those guys where I don't think he has been in a game since Tecmo Bowl, and he was such a, you know, he cast such a large shadow in sports gaming because of that. And it's one of those things where for guys that are my age, you know, we grew up in the time when Bo was just this mythical guy who was on SportsCenter every day, be it baseball or football, doing these heroic things. And goes down as the greatest video game sports character of all time. So it was, for us, we wanted to make sure we did him right in the game. And so, yeah, he's a lot of fun to play with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So one of the things I've noticed as I've played this game for a long time is that, you know, I'll sit there and play and do the dynasty mode till whatever time in the middle of the night and have a lot of fun and pick a school that's a nobody school, or pick a school that's, you know, pick a Michigan or a Alabama or somebody as well, just to do different things. And I kind of thought, man, I am a geek. Like, I can't, you know, and my wife would walk in and she'd be like, I'd be all like, you know, ticked off because I lost in the, you know, championship game or in a bowl. And she's like, it's not real. But how often do you, I run into my brothers who do the same thing, but a lot of football fans I'd run into and find out that they were doing the same thing. I mean, do you hear that all the time when people find out what you do, or when you go out and talk to the gamers that play the game? Is that just a common theme, that how deeply people get into this game?
Oh, I mean, most definitely. I can't tell you the number of stories I've heard of people telling me. It's almost like, you know, how people love telling you about their fantasy teams, and how they did in fantasy football the week before. They love telling you the stories of what's happened in the game and some of their great moments, or just questions they've always had about features or things they'd love to see added to the game, or, you know, this and that. And, you know, it's so much fun. When people hear what I do, their eyes almost light up. They're like, really? you get to do that for a living? And like, it's kind of a really fun thing to have that conversation, because, you know, the other part too is being a college football game. People are very passionate about their schools, and so that's another part that I love, is that I can go all around the country and talk to all these different people, and they love the game so much, and just a chance to talk, you know, college football about their school, and how, you know, we can add aspects of their school into the game to make it more realistic and make it more lifelike and make, you know, Lavelle Edwards Stadium feel just like it does in a real game. And how can we add in, you know, the uniform pieces that, you know, we've got, you know, not on the current set of uniforms, but I believe we still have the 84 throwback BYU uniforms in there as well. So, you know, just those touches that make it feel like, wow, that you know, my school is being taken care of by this game.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you ever get people questioning your ratings for players?
Well, so, you know, people do always question why, you know, teams are rated certain ways and that sort of thing. With the player portion of it, you know, we do have an easy out for that, in that we don't have the rights to current college players.
Right,
so,
right.
You know, what you're seeing isn't the actual player. So, you know, it's an easy question that people ask, but, you know, it's since we don't have the rights to the real guys, you know, it's just kind of we tried to make the team as close as we could to how they're going to play in real life. And so, you know, you look at you look to try and make a school kind of, do they run the air raid? Okay, well, how are we going to build a team that can properly run the air raid based on how good we expect this team to be, type thing?
No, absolutely. It's not like Madden, where you're going to have actual players calling and all ticked off with their ratings.
And so, you won't believe how vocal those guys are, you know, because once you add an actual person's name to it, now that becomes a real person.
Yeah.
And they go, why am I rated this way? My speed is this, my blah, blah, blah. It's so funny.
Yeah, I met John Tate, who played for BYU and then for the Bears and the Chiefs as an offensive lineman. I ran into him once, knew him a little bit when he was at BYU, and I asked him about if everybody checks out their Madden rating, and he's like, oh yeah, the day it comes out. And he said even the offensive linemen are getting all ticked off, not just the prima donna wide receivers. So, well, one last question. You kind of touched on it, Ben, and then we'll let you go. You talked about how people just, you know, kind of gush about, wow, you get to do that. And I think probably a lot of people react to you that way about your job, because, you know, there are a lot of us, you know, our generation, you and I, that grew up in the kind of the golden age of gaming. And now these kids that have now grown up, that gaming has been part of their life since before they can remember. What would you tell as somebody, we got quite a bit of our listeners that are still in school. What would you say to somebody who wanted to get into games, but now it's like, gosh, everybody wants to get into games, and it's such a crowded thing, like that it might have been, you know, different 30 years ago or 25 years ago, or even 13 years ago or 15 when you came in. What kind of advice would you have to somebody who wanted to get into doing what you do?
Yeah, you know, I think I came along at a different time, you know, before there were concepts of getting degrees in anything game related. You know, I have a degree in sociology. I got in to the industry through QA as a tester, and that was a great spot to kind of learn the ropes to become a designer and eventually become a producer. But, you know, if you want to do something technical, there have always been kind of thought, you know, you can get, you know, a degree in engineering, and or artists can get their own specialized degrees. But now there are actually schools that have degrees in things like game design. And these kids are coming out of school with masters in game design that they are ready to go day one, you know, comparable with any other designer in the building because they've already done that work before. So it's really kind of interesting to see that aspect, that you can go out and get that degree if that's something you're really interested in. But the other thing, and this is, you know, I think always the case when you're just trying to start out, is get your foot in the door. Take a job that, you know, is going to get you in a place where you can show what you can do. You know, I think that's one thing, you know, the first job that you get out of college probably isn't going to be the best job you're ever going to have in your life. So get in there and prove that you can do it and impress some people and get that next, you know, the second job be a better one and keep going from there.
Awesome. So, Ben, we really enjoyed having you on. Of course, we'd encourage all of our listeners to go out and get NCAA Football 14 available on PS3 and Xbox 360, correct?
Yep, that's correct.
All right. And anything else you want to say about the game or anything before we let you go?
No, I mean, I think, you know, if you love college football, you know, this is the game for you. It is such a great companion piece for the season. It's a great spot it's a great game to get right now to get you prepared for the season. And, you know, just everything, the improvement of gameplay, the option game, just the physics being applied, it's the most complete package we've ever done.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Ben, for coming on. And, heck, maybe we'll have you out next year for NCAA 15.
That'd be great.
Try to fix it. And think of the summers of the past.